Let the games begin.
Carnage. Carnage.
My name is Khan.
Hey, what's up? It's the Carnage Podcast, and it's Hassan back with you again. It's been a while, you know. It's been a really long time, actually. I'm so pleased to be with you again. And today's interview is really no different to anything you've had before, in that it is inspiring, motivational. It's the kind of interview that makes you sit up and really reevaluate your own life and think, bloody hell, what on earth am I questioning? What on earth am I doing? And that's really where the similarity ends. Honestly, urge you to listen to the end, because like no other, and I will say this, yes, it's my podcast and I don't know, wherever you're listening to this, like no other podcast you've ever heard before, the ending is in bloody incredible. So hold on tight. And by the way, as per usual, I really have gone international again. We're actually going over to America and Chicago, where I'm joined on the line by Sumaya. Hello.
Hi, Hassan. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
I'm so glad you're here, actually, Sumaya, because I really want to be able to really look into your life and your story. And I've said that, you know, it's similar in some ways to my previous guests because you are visually impaired. But I think that's where it ends, because every story is special. Everyone has a story. I do want to keep it fun, but I want to take you back to right at the beginning, as I've done with all my guests. Could you tell me how you lost your sight?
I lost my sight at the age of 2. I was diagnosed with leukemia, AML, which is a rare form of leukemia. Usually children get ALL. After a bone marrow transplant and lots of chemo and radiation, blood transfusions. Yeah, something had gone wrong in a platelet transfusion, which caused an infection, which that infection was the cause of my total loss of eyesight. And they tried to do surgery to restore that my eyesight, but it was unsuccessful. And that's how it happened.
You know, it's actually crazy. And I probably sound boring and probably sound like I've planned this, because on my podcast, you had Amira from Palestine, who actually had a medical error. Then you had Simran, who drank some syrup, cough medicine or temperature fever medicine, and lost her sight as a result. Now, another medical error, what impact did it have on your family right at the beginning? What have they told you?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, my mom was in the hospital for the entire year. So I have 4 siblings above me. And then at the time my younger sister was born, who was a year younger than me, she just had a lot on her plate. So she was, you know, the number one supporter that was, you know, with me the whole time and fighting for me, fighting for my life. And it took a huge toll on her. I mean, it was a lot to go through as a mom. And it was, yeah, it was a lot of tears and praying and, you know, hope that my mom hung on to. And honestly, I probably wouldn't have made it through without my mom's support and hope and the fight that she put up to I had to get transferred from the hospital that I was initially at. And after they had done this error, my mom, you know, she wasn't really aware at the time, or like, it's not like she knew that much, but she knew that she was supposed to transfer me because of what had gone wrong. And so she did. And if she hadn't fought for that and done that, then yeah, I don't know where I would be.
So you said that you've got 4 siblings who are older than you. How many siblings have you got now then?
8. So we're
8
9
siblings.
Total.
Right. So there's 9 of you. And are you the only one who's visually impaired or / blind?
Yes, I'm the only one who's blind.
Okay. So at the time, what impact did it have on your siblings then? Obviously, we've heard about how, you know, your mom put in the hard yards and helped you and supported you through the process. You probably wouldn't have made it but for her incredible work. What about your siblings? What were their understanding of what was happening to you?
Honestly, it was very new to everybody. Blindness was not something that we were like aware of, as far as like in our culture and our family, and you know, with that kind of thing, it was very new to everybody. But I think that, you know, with learning and my mom putting in the work to educate herself and to learn more about blindness and how to deal with it, how to get, you know, her other kids to deal with it and to understand it and kind of like educate all of us on it. She reached out and, you know, obtained the resources that she needed to, you know, to help all of us in that situation to be able to understand it like completely. I do remember like when we got older and stuff, the most important thing that stood out for me was that my siblings had treated me the same way as like each other. So it never really made me feel like I was different than them, you know, which was a good thing. And then it just learning, being in schools and stuff like that, we were taught like different things, and we had people come to our home and like help the family out with teaching different things, just basic things,
sort of like visual awareness training.
Yeah, visual awareness training and like orientation mobility training.
So mate, look, you mentioned the C word, culture. Obviously, look, you've got this American accent, but you are Palestinian, Palestini by birth. What was blindness construed as, and how was it taken in your culture then, just overall now, your aunts, uncles, and beyond?
So it's typically taken as weakness. People pity you. They feel bad for you. And one of the biggest things that stood out for me as, you know, growing up was going to like the mosques and different events and stuff, and like, you know, we'd shake hands with people. They would always tell me one thing, and it was, they would always tell me like, may God cure you, and they would say it in Arabic, and it was something that stuck with me from a young age up until now, because it always made me feel like there's something wrong with me. And that's the one thing that I have always remembered and that I've always despised, because that's, you know, something that just really made me feel like I was different than everybody else and that there was something wrong with me. You know, as I got older, as I went through my years in school and getting an education and learning how to be independent, learning, you know, cooking skills, daily living skills, technology, Braille, all of these different types of things that made me independent, it's changed the narrative for like a lot of people. Now they see me as, you know, someone who's completely independent, somebody who's able to really do whatever I set my mind to do. I do think that there are other sides of the family still that still have that pity kind of view of it. You know, there's always going to be people like that, but what matters to me is the people closest to me and how they see me, and they you know, are proud and have that belief in me, and that they are able to see me beyond the blindness.
Right, but you understand how single-handedly you've changed thoughts and perceptions. Because look, here's a family who has never understood blindness, visual impairment, didn't know what it is. It's from a culture that probably a little bit, you know, blind to it, mind the pun. And then suddenly bestowed upon them is this blind child. Only God knows why things happen the way they happen, but they happen for a reason. And now they suddenly are having to understand blindness, accept blindness and perceive blindness, and you are the instigator of it. Does that make you proud?
Yeah, I mean, I feel extremely grateful that I had the resources and the support from, you know, my mom and the teachers and the education that I had, because without it, I don't think I would be where I'm at. It makes me feel really grateful. It also makes me think about other people that are in other situations or less fortunate situations that don't have what I had. It makes me feel like I want to make a difference because I know what I had and I know what I was able to achieve because of the support and resources that I have. I want to be able to give that to other people, especially when I had gone to Palestine, you know, back when we were kids. I was in like third grade and I attended a school for the blind there. Seeing that and seeing how very little resources and little education they have there, it really put things into perspective for me, and it made me realize that I have so much to be grateful for, and there's so much that I wish and I hope that I can change in the future, because there's so many people that deserve to have the support and the resources that I had.
Okay, so I was going to actually come on to the academic side of things in the USA, but you've aptly mentioned that you actually went to Palestine and studied there. So in a couple of sentences, could you compare the two worlds and the two schools? And what was it actually like, both in the USA and in Palestine? Talk to me about your education in the two different worlds.
So in the US, here in Chicago, I went to public schools. So I attended the normal curriculum, normal classes with sighted kids. I was the only blind person in the school from like elementary to high school. And it was normal courses and stuff like that. And then I would have separate class time, one-on-one time with a teacher for the visually impaired who would teach me technology, computer skills, Braille, basically anything that I needed to learn differently than my peers because of my sight loss. So, you know, learning to read and write, I would, when they would do their handwriting time or class, I would learn to read Braille and write Braille. And then I had a teacher who was for orientation mobility, and she taught me how to use a cane and how to navigate around from class to class, from, you know, my house to the bus stop, or from point A to point B, basically street crossing, stuff like that, as I got older, buses, trains. And that was what I had from a young age all the way up until high school. And on top of it, having so many siblings and a mom who treats you like you're, you know, no less than the rest. And if anything, I probably had it tougher than them, just because, you know, sometimes you need that. But then going to Palestine and attending the school there for the blind, it was a completely different experience. And it was getting in a taxi half an hour away, being brand new to the country, to the environment, not knowing your surroundings or anything. It was pretty scary. And then going into a school, and my first experience of that first day was walking in and just the whole group of students surrounding me. Everybody like wanted to feel my face, and they were asking me who I am and just very amazed that I was from America. Their first reaction was to feel my face, and that was something that was really shocking to me, because I have never been introduced to that or like ever done that before. So it was pretty freaky, and I don't like people touching me, so it was really uncomfortable. But
I mean, well, did they think that you felt different because you're American somehow?
I have no idea what it was about, but I think that maybe it was a way of identifying people. And I bring that up because I think that it plays into the role of education and how little education they receive there. From that first experience, I was like, okay, this is just going to be super unprofessional. And this is me, I'm like 8 years old at the time. So I was just freaking out. And then we had gone to class afterwards, and it was just really unorganized. It was kind of like just people killing time, and there was no like constructive curriculum, and it was just terrible. And there was no like technology, there was no help either, there was no proper teaching of sighted guide, there was no proper cane technique that was taught, there was just none of that. And it was really, really different.
So you've gone from like actually having sort of hope and actually learning something that was going to lead to something, to a country where almost third world, and almost where you're going to school for tick box exercise. What was your mental health like? How were you dealing with it all?
Well, I've always been pretty sensitive. So I was just, at first I was pretty shocked. So I was like frozen. And then afterwards, like after maybe, I don't know, like halfway into the day, they had all gone to lunch, and I just stayed behind in the classroom, and I was just sitting there, and I was really frustrated. And so I got up and I went to, you know, like find my way around and stuff. And I fell down a flight of stairs, and then I kind of just lost it. You know, I was really emotional, crying, and told my parents, like, I'm not going back there and I can't do it. And it's too much. And it took a huge toll on me. And the next day they wanted to go swimming at the school for the blind. And I fought for my life for my parents to allow me to stay home. It worked, but it was a lot of fighting. And it was a really heavy
stuff. How long were you there for?
We were there for like 4 months.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Presumably you then went back to the USA and to pick up your education where you'd left off.
Yeah, correct.
That's quite a lot to contend with in the 8 years, having lost your sight and stuff, and then ending up in a different country. So you've gone back, presumably you've also started picking up friends in the USA. Now, have you gone back to the same school, or what's been the setup when you've returned back to Chicago?
Yeah, I went to the same school that I was initially at, and kind of just picked up where I left off. But I was a bit kind of on edge, I would say, just because it was, you know, coming from that and then going back to this and kind of like readjusting was challenging, but it was my comfort zone. So
Right. And your obviously your first language.
Yeah, and that too.
So talk to me about a little bit about once you've completed school, what did you go on to do afterwards, and where do we find you now?
So after school and everything, I went to a community college out here. It's kind of like where people go before going to university. So I did that for a year, and that was really exciting for me because it was, you know, my first experience out in like the real world on my own. And so going to the campus and getting from one class to the other and having to rely on myself completely was exciting. At the time, I loved challenges and I loved like learning, and I was really curious as to how much I could do. And in this situation, I had to do it. So it was, you know, it was lots of adventures. Yeah, I attended the campus for a year where I made some friends. And again, it was a really amazing experience. And after that, I had completed all the credits I needed to enroll in court reporting and captioning school, which is what I've set out to do since high school. And that was an online school, actually. And
tell me what that is a little bit for those of us who may not know what that is.
So it's one degree, one field that you go into, but two different jobs that you could work. So court reporting is when your job is to type everything that's being said in the court verbatim. So it's word for word what's being said in the court. So if there's a trial or if there's a civil hearing or whatever is going on in court, you are assigned to, you know, a specific room or a specific case, and your job is to type everything out that's said for the record, and then to edit it and then submit it into the court system. That's what court reporters do. And we use it's called a steno machine. So it's kind of like an old fashioned typewriter, and you have to learn what's called shorthand. And this is the first thing that I started with. So I got my steno machine from the school and I had to learn shorthand, which kind of for me, I had an advantage because I already was proficient in Braille, and learning shorthand was very similar to learning Braille, like the concept of it. I got through that pretty quickly and then moved on to speed. So the whole point in court reporting school is to reach a speed of 225 words a minute typing speed. You go through different speed classes. So you start with 60 and then you work your way up all the way to 225, and you have to take tests. I completed that. And then I heard about CART providing or captioning, which are both services for the deaf and hard of hearing. So CART specifically is when a deaf student is on like attending a lecture or university and they can't hear what the, you know, professor is saying. They have to read like the subtitles and text off of a live streaming app, and they need somebody to do that for them, which is what a CART provider does. And a captioner is very similar, but that's more with like movies and TV shows. And I did that. I graduated from the online school.
Amazing.
And then I worked for a while in that field. And then I kind of ventured out to new things.
Why that field? What inspired you to go into it? Because it always fascinates me when people say, I'm like a doctor or I'm a lawyer. I'm like, what's inspired you? What makes you want to be going into that field?
We had a project assigned to us in middle school, and we had to search a bunch of careers and decide which one we wanted to do. And I came across court reporting and I thought it was cool and it was really interesting. So I kind of just went with it, even though it was just a school project.
Okay, cool, kid. So what about now? What are you doing? Are you doing anything now in terms of work, in terms of life? Are you doing anything for life? You know what I mean.
I'm just lifing it out.
Yeah, you're lifing it out, but like you're lifing it out in the Chicago way, but like what are you doing anything in terms of work-wise?
Right now I'm doing digital accessibility, so kind of just testing different websites for accessibility and making sure that accessible with screen reader users. There are a lot of websites that are not compliant with the ADA laws, so which is the Americans with Disability Act. And when we're using websites and we can't use them independently because of accessibility issues. So if you can't check out an item when you're buying something, or if you're trying to navigate through a website and it's the cursor's jumping around the page and stuff like that, that means that the website is not compatible with the screen reader. So our job is to, write up reviews on different websites that are inaccessible and then kind of submit it for auditing and take it to the ADA and talk to these companies to make sure that they are aware of this and that they're aware that their websites need to be accessible for all screen reader users or blind or visually impaired individuals.
And if they're not accessible, what happens then?
Well, they're educated about why it's important, and they're educated about the Americans with Disabilities Act and how it's a law in the US that they have to be compliant with it. And then they are usually given a timeline to change their website or to make their website accessible.
In terms of dealing with blindness and accepting your blindness, I know it's a difficult topic, but there are many people who are either new to sight loss or who may not understand it. Tell me a little bit about that.
So me accepting my blindness was a pretty long journey, but for the most part, I was pretty embarrassed of my blindness. I didn't like it. Even though people didn't make me feel different, I felt like I was different. And then, using a cane and having to use a braille writer or just doing everything differently than everybody else, it just kind of ate up at me throughout my years. And I was really shy because I didn't have the confidence to really talk to people because of my blindness. It made me feel like I was, I don't know, less than other people. And yeah, I had a really hard time with it for a very long time. And it wasn't until, honestly, I think it was like my last year of high school that I kind of maybe started talking a lot more. But then the highlight of it all was the years after high school. I attended a program that was for like additional independence training. And there is a guy there that I met, and he was deaf, or he was hard of hearing and also had cerebral palsy. And so like my first day there, I was like just so humbled. And when I seen him and I met him and I talked with him, I just realized like I have it so good. And not to say that he doesn't, he's amazing and very smart, but it made me realize that I shouldn't be so negative about it, and I should accept it and embrace it because people have a lot more to accept and embrace and live with. And that was when I finally accepted it and embraced it and decided to go with it and be proud of who I am and be okay with my blindness and just kind of not really pay any attention to anybody that had a problem with it. And then the one thing that I realized is that if I am confident with myself, then that attracts positive energy towards me. So that was the biggest thing that I learned.
As an American Palestinian growing up in America, what have been your personal barriers, both societal, cultural, or otherwise?
I think it's having to put in twice as much work than anybody else for like simple things. And not anybody else. By that, I mean like sighted people or like even my siblings or whoever, my friends. Just knowing that if I do the same thing that they're doing, I have to think about it more. I have to put in more work than they do to make it happen. And that's been a thing that's been kind of like applied from school up until now, like even just with school, like with work. So with Braille, obviously, it's you take longer, even with being a very quick Braille reader and writer, it's still time consuming with compared to like sighted, my sighted peers who, are able to just grab a pencil and fill out their thing. And a lot of things, technology, you know, having to use a screen reader. And then especially with college and university, it was like, you know, you got to fight for basic things like getting accessible formats of books and material. Whereas sighted people don't have to do that.
What about employment? I mean, it's a really obvious one. So, for example, in the UK, right? Exactly. So in the UK, for example, only 4% of completely blind people, and I'm just paraphrasing the statistics, work, and only 25% of, say, partially sighted people work. These are appalling figures.
Yeah, definitely.
What is it like in the USA?
It's the same challenge.
Same thing. I mean, look, for example, just take you as an example. You write well, you've got the gift of the gab, which basically is what we say in England, gift of the gab, someone knows how to talk. I'm sure you can conduct yourself very well in a workplace. But it's those opportunities, it's creating those opportunities and having those fair chances. That's my spiel over. That's my serious face over with. Tell me a little bit about your interests. What makes Sumaya tick? Who are you? What are you? Where are you?
I love adventures. I love learning new things. I enjoy cooking.
But wait, you're blind. You can't cook. Go on, shatter the illusions and break those barriers and tell me about that briefly.
Oh, I learned to cook from when I was in high school. I started learning how to use a stove and all these things. I just, you know, used Google and searched recipes and learned what I could, learned from my friends, from my mom. And then I just started doing it and practicing it. And then now I love it.
What's your best go-to dish? Say I'm coming round, and what are you going to make me?
Well, you're really picky, so...
What's your go-to dish, Samael?
Salmon and potatoes.
Yeah.
Or broccoli.
Tell the world listening to you, what makes you who you are?
What makes me who I am is the experiences that I went through, and I really believe that the experiences have a huge part in who someone is and who they become, and it kind of contributes a lot to where you end up mentally and emotionally. And so I think that my experiences made me who I am.
Your experiences shape you, break you, and then make you. Now, if you allow it to make you, and you allow it to make you into a stronger and a better person, then that breaking and that shaping process will be well worth it, even though at the time it was a lot of pain. So yeah, I'm quite proud of you for what you've been through and how you've come out of it. Look, we're coming towards the end.
Thank you.
Now, I have a little quiz for you. Not anything I've ever done with any other guest, and you can listen back. Of course, I know you've gone back and listened to all of my catalog, obviously. The quiz question is, how well do you know me, the host?
Is that a true question?
No, there's questions. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Actually, to be fair, I'm more terrified because I don't really tell people on here anything about me. So we'll start with nice and easy question. Which city do I live in England?
London.
Correct. What city was I born in?
Multan, Pakistan.
Whoa, yeah. I mean, I'm going to give you that. Yeah, okay. All right. Oh, you ready for this one? What's my middle name?
Mustafa.
Oh God! You see, that's one. That's one thing I didn't ever want to say on a podcast. Okay. what football team do I support?
Manchester United.
What cricket team do I support?
Cricket team.
Yeah, international cricket team.
Pakistan.
Yeah. What's my favorite color?
Red.
Okay. Good. How do you know me so well? But I have one more question. One more question.
Make it good.
What do you mean, make it? Look, okay. Can you name 4 countries I have traveled to playing cricket?
Oh, okay. Pakistan.
Cheating. That's incredible. That's ridiculous. No, okay. Okay, well, let's see. It might have to be 4.5. Okay, go. Another one?
Barbados.
I'll give you that. I'll give you Barbados.
Oh, Australia.
Yeah, now you sound confident. Okay, 2 more.
India.
And one more.
Sri Lanka.
All right, Samaya, listen, you've kind of... you kind of did all right at the test. So I think, oh God, this is so bizarre. Like, honestly, this whole thing has been really bizarre. So, like, I've honestly recorded episodes with people where I've not felt any nerves or anything. And I've found it incredibly easy to be professional. Like, what most people will not know, and they will now, like, throughout this interview, I basically was like 70% of the time muted because I'm like, oh my God, how do I keep my professionalism? To be fair, podcasts should be fun anyways, but like a lot of the stories that we cover and your one, there's quite a lot of serious elements to it. But we said to the people, to the people listening, that there's something we want to sort of like disclose to them, tell them, surprise them, blow their minds. Should we do it?
Go for it.
All right, so look, I've never done this, I swear. You can go and listen. Oh my days. Like, I honestly, I probably feel more nervous about this question than I actually did when I asked it. So, Swear, you've had a great life. You've done well. You've achieved a lot. Would you like to come to England?
Come to England for
Yeah.
a cricket match?
No. Sort of, in a way, it's sort of in my world, it would be a cricket match, but it's more like a marriage match. Would you like to marry me at some point in the near future, Smile?
Must you ask so professionally?
I mean, I could get down on one knee and do it through this audio podcast. Oh my God, you know what? Like, yeah. I mean, will you marry me, Smile?
I would be honored to marry you, Hassan.
Whoa. Wait, can you actually believe that? Like, we've actually met on a podcast and married on a podcast. That's what they
Insane.
think. That's what they think.
That's what they think.
Let them talk about it. Today's newspaper is tomorrow's chip wrapping. Do you know even know what that means? Okay, so basically, yeah, we're so well known for fish and chips in Great Britain because that's the only dish we know how to make, right? So like when you buy fish and chips from a shop, it comes wrapped in a paper, and the paper is usually newspaper.
Oh,
So
yeah.
today's news is tomorrow chips wrappings or whatever the saying is. I told you this one time, my brother's friends were having a fish and chips night on a Friday, as that's what we do at Blue
I
and
know,
White's
and
on a
they saw you in
Friday.
the newspaper.
Exactly. As they open their fish and chips, they saw my face. So yeah,
Yeah,
I
that's
appear
so
on
funny.
dining tables. So Smile, would you like to appear on my dining table? Okay, no, don't
I
answer that question.
would love
Right, okay, we'll see you soon. Smile, listen, it's been an honor. Honestly, thank you for sharing that story. And to anybody who's listening, I hope that you are able to take it for what it is. It's an incredible story in its own way. Smile, would you do me one more favor?
Of course.
Will you let your parents know I'm coming to get you?
Right away.
Okay, cool.
When are you
Listen,
coming?
I will see you soon on an episode soon. I'm sure you can just co-host or be host or do whatever, and I'll speak to you soon, like probably
Amazing. Well, thank you
after
for
this.
having me.
Any other messages?
So, to all the Carnage fans out there, I would just like to say that
Woof, woof.
we should be spreading these podcasts because they have amazing stories and there are people who have been through a lot in different parts of the world, and it's really, really good for sharing and spreading awareness. And shout out to Hassan for doing this, and I hope that it becomes a lot bigger so that more people can learn.
Well, on that note, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and Samaya, good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night.
I'll be back.
Sounds about right.